Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're going to turn our attention now to biofuels and talk about them in relationship to corn. You know, we've got these, our traditional sources of energy are being depleted. There's a global need for affordable, sustainable energy, and a lot of people are looking at that very question. And the two people that I have with me today are certainly doing that. John Greenler, director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, or GLBRC, as we often call it. John, great to have you back.
It's a pleasure to be here, Larry. Thank you.
And also with us today, Natalia De Leon is an assistant professor of agronomy at UW-Madison and is a project lead for the GLBRC. And Natalia, thank you for coming by as well. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me.
We've talked about ethanol in the past, and we'll certainly be talking about it again today. By the way, if you have questions about bioenergy, I hope you'll join us. If you thought about things like corn stover as a possible source of bioenergy, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there. I think we already have something there on our Facebook page. We'll take a look at that in just a minute. But we have talked about ethanol in the past, but what you are talking about is a little different, and maybe you can explain that for us. You and Natalia, we start with you.
Sure. So thank you for having us here. And so the work that we are doing in GOBRC is looking at what is the utility of corn, both as a source of biomass for the production of biofuel and also as a resource to learn in terms of the biology and the genetics of this particular crop and how we can translate some of that information to improve plants, other dedicated bioenergy crops, such as switchgrass and miscanthus, and how we can improve those plants to try to address some of the issues that you just described.
Yeah, and you want to add to that a bit, John?
No, I think that's great. The one other thing I can mention in just in terms of ethanol that I think is valuable to recognize is that we can make ethanol from lots of different types of biomass. And so, you know, sometimes people say, well, I've heard ethanol is a bad biofuel, for example. And really what's important is to consider what's behind that. Where did that ethanol come from? How do we produce it? And, you know, how are we going to use it as an alternative energy source?
So in what ways can the rest of a plant, like a corn plant, be used to produce sustainable biofuel? I guess that's the big question.
Yeah, and exactly. So in the case of corn, there has been 100 years of investment, both in the public and private sector, to improve corn, primarily to use for grain. It is the major commodity in the United States, and it's a very important part of the of agriculture and our economy. Now what we are looking at is, can we utilize the other parts of the plant, excluding the grain, to try to address our energy needs? Can we sustainably produce biomass, and can corn be a source of such biomass to try to address some of those important issues?
Yeah, so clearly if we're raising corn, we're growing corn for that grain, I mean, there is this question, well, what about the rest of that plant? Are there ways that we could use maybe at least a portion of that plant, you know, for making this fuel as well as making, you know, growing the grain for food, for example?
Yeah. We had a Facebook question from Roger who says, typically the rest of the corn plant is tilled into the soil to feed the soil and reduce winter erosion tilling and growing corn. If the rest of the corn plant is used for energy production, what is the effect on the soil of the fields? What's the total sustainable equation here when soil health and erosion are factored in?
That is an excellent question, and it's one that we have to very carefully address. And I'm going to start by saying that what is the amount of biomass that could be used for biofuels will depend on what type of soil and what climate this corn is grown in. There are areas that are very prone to erosions and other problems of soil composition and soil quality. And in those cases, probably the amount of biomass that could be that would make sense to take away from the fields will be relatively small. And there are the situations that allow for, you know, probably bigger amounts of biomass that could be removed. Just to give you a few numbers, so in the United States, there are about 85 million acres that are produced every year of corn, and about 50% of the dry matter that is produced is grain. 50% of that dry matter is produced in every acre is stover. Even if a small proportion of that stover is removed from the fields and used for the production of biofuels, it will make a relative impact on our ability to solve some of the biofuel issues. But again, the question that that was posted is a very critical one, and one that has to be addressed almost on a case-by-case basis to make sure that we maintain organic matter and long-term longevity of the soils.
Yeah.
And I can just briefly mention that we're actively looking into this very question, and we have a whole area of research in GLBRC looking at sustainability issues. And so up at the Arlington Research Station, for example, there's some really interesting trials going on in lots of different types of cropping systems. But one of them is looking at corn. And an interesting outcome of kind of the way our corn production has changed is that it's grown so densely now that if you leave all of that stover, it's actually a problem for the farmers. And so in many cases, removing a portion of that stover really can make a big difference in terms of what happens in next year's crop. And so actually we had some trials this year where you could really see when they didn't remove any stover, the in the spring especially, the ability to get in and really get the next year's crop going was really retarded, where if, you know, a portion of that crop was removed, you were getting, you know, much better growth as the season got going.
So there are ways that you can take a portion of that off after the crop, after the corn itself has been taken?
Yeah, so there is equipment that is being developed to actually try to do that simultaneously, where prototypes of machines where farmers can combine their grain and a portion of that biomass could be collected. The sort of the first approach initially was to try to use cobs, which is the internal part of the ear. When farmers are harvesting their grain for production, the cobs are actually just thrown to the back of the combine. If just collecting those cobs alone, it's a way to start using some of that biomass again for the production of biofuels.
And I'm thinking about a cob, and I'm not seeing a whole lot of sugars or anything in there that a person could actually use. And
yeah,
that's the whole crux of it, I suppose.
Yeah, so the model that people that is being proposed in the case of utilizing biomass is that the sugars that we are talking about are structural carbohydrates that are located in the cell walls of the biomass. So these are not free sugars. The model that is used in Brazil, for example, where they use sugar cane for the production of biofuels, the idea there is that they actually squeeze the sugar cane and use the syrup, the sugar that is in the internal parts of the stalks, and ferment that for the production of ethanol. This is a different proposition. This is utilizing the cell walls, the biomass itself, that needs to be breakdown and fermented for production of ethanol, for example.
And Brazil's pretty good at it, isn't that country?
Yeah, Brazil has a very long history of producing biofuels, again, utilizing primarily the sugarcane model, where they squeeze the sugarcane and then utilize the syrup, for lack of a better word, to be fermented and generate ethanol.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting aside along those lines, last week, actually, I was in Wyoming visiting a biofuels pilot plant where they were actually taking what's known as bagasse. It's the fibrous cellulosic material that's left over from the sugarcane plant after you squeeze out all that juice. And the Brazilian government is really interested in, you know, once again, increasing their efficiency. Can they take that fibrous plant material, a lot like corn stover, and turn that into a biofuel as well? And so, you know, we really want to make sure that we're being as efficient efficient as possible with these types of materials. So,
yeah. Just as an aside, then, does Brazil, what percentage of, I mean, how well does Brazil do with the?
Well, for internal consumptions, they do very well. If you go to a gas station in Brazil, you can choose you want to use gasoline or alcohol. And cars are, most of the cars are hybrids, and they can use either or. And the supply chain, it's all set up. But it has been decades that that they have been working in this model. Now, the consumption of fuels in Brazil is substantially small compared to the United States. Yeah. So although they can meet the demand is substantially lower than in the United States.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think what I've heard, it takes about $100 more now in Brazil to produce, you know, to make a car that is essentially will run on E85 as we know it in this country. And the country basically, the Brazilian government has said all cars that are new that are sold in this country will be E85 compatible. So
there you go. Terry and Whitlaw, we go to you now. Thank you for calling, Terry.
Hi, you're welcome. Thanks for the program. One of my first jobs as a 12-year-old was working on a farm, so I'm trying to think as a farmer's standpoint, you know, he's trying to limit the number of time he's making a pass over that field. And so there's, I got several questions about, I'll limit to two or three here. First question would be, do the existing biofuel plants like in Juneau County and Winnebago County that are making ethanol or biofuels out of grain right now, are they set up where they could use the fibers or the stock materials to process at the present time? That's one question. The second question is kind of from a jobs factor. Are the large implement manufacturers like Case IH, John Deere, are you working with them in developing, you know, a combine that'll either take the sugars or the cell material from the cobs or the stalks, you know, as the corn is being combined, the corn being used for you know, grain or for feed or for for food. So those are the two big issues. You know, how is the current research, and where is the current research on those two issues? I'll think my answer off the air.
All right, thank you very much for calling.
So I can address your first question. So there is currently no biorefinery that is able to produce biofuels from biomass commercially. There are some prototypes. DOE, the Department of Energy, is sponsoring some biorefiners that are starting to do the research about what are the biomass sources that make sense, how they need to be processed, transported, all the logistics related to that. But there is no commercial biorefinery, to my knowledge, that is producing biofuel from biomass. And as to your second question is, there are companies that are looking into possibilities of creating one-pass combines, as I indicated before, that will be able to harvest the grain and the biomass at the same time. There are researchers here at the University of Wisconsin, as well as Iowa State University, and I'm sure other places that are working on developing those prototypes. I cannot tell you more than that. I'm not an expert on it, but I know there is work going on.
And we'll talk some more about that with our guests right after we take a look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As traditional sources of energy are depleted, there's a global need for affordable, sustainable energy. But with millions of at risk of hunger worldwide, there's an understandable resistance to using food crops as fuel instead. Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Discussions around sustainable energy like ethanol can get stuck at the point of food or fuel, but what if we can produce food and fuel from the same harvest? And our guests today from the GLBRC, Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, have some great information to share with us on that. And they'll be with us for the next half hour. And they're happy to answer your questions. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or leave a question or comment on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Like the page and we'll send you updates. Back after the news. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking today about biofuels. We've looked at corn and corn stover as potential for biofuel, especially corn stover. But we're talking about taking a broader look at biofuels as well with our two guests, John Greenler, Director of the Education and Outreach Program for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, and Natalia De Leon is an Assistant Professor in Agronomy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's a project lead for the GLBRC. Questions, our lines are all filled right now, but you could email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, post there. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. And we have so many callers, we'd better go right to the phones and see what's up here. Chris in Holman, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hey, no problem. Thanks, guys. I think the topic is a great one. Biofuels, I think, have got to be part of the solution in the future. I have just a couple quick questions, I guess. One, do you see biodiesel as being as important as some of the ethanol-based fuels? And I've read a lot recently about the use of algae in the creating of biofuels, and I kind of just wondered what your thoughts were on that, and I can take the comments off the air.
All right. Thank you for calling. And, John Greenler, let's turn to you.
Yeah, two great questions. Biodiesel, I think, has a lot of potential. It has more of a focus in Europe because in Europe they're really much more wired, so to speak, for using diesel. Most of their cars, as well as their trucks, et cetera, are running on diesel. And once again, it's just as much a question, as I kind of intimated earlier with the ethanol, about where does that biodiesel come from as compared to like biodiesel versus ethanol, for example. So the traditional way of making biodiesel, you know, today is from, you know, crops like canola or soybean, palm oil biodiesel in the tropics. And I think there's some, we don't need to go into the details, but there's some questions about this long-term sustainability of using those kinds of crops to produce biodiesel. On the other hand, it really looks like we should in the future be able to make biodiesel-type fuels from, once again, from these fibrous plant materials, cellulosic plant materials. So we take those polymers, that Natalia was talking about, cellulose, hemicellulose, break them down into these simpler sugars. And then there's actually a number of different ways. There's microbes out there that can do almost anything, it seems like. And there's microbial processes that will actually make diesel-like products. And so, you know, it looks like we should be able to, find the right metabolic pathways to go from sugars to a fuel which would work in a diesel-like engine. And so that's what we're really looking towards. And we actually have researchers in GLBRC that are looking, doing research in that area.
What about the algae?
Algae is, I think, is even a little bit further out. We are today corn grain to ethanol. We kind of talk about that as being a first-generation biofuel. These cellulosic-type fuels, fibrous materials to ethanol or diesel, that's kind of second generation. And really, kind of in the industry, we look at algae as being third generation. And really what that is saying is we need to do a lot more research. And so, there are pilot-scale plants out there that are making, tens of thousands of gallons, for example, of ethanol from these, cellulosic materials. We've got a pretty good idea now of, how that's going to work, and we need to tune it, make it more efficient, more economical, et cetera. With algae, we're really, kind of at the earlier stages. And there's a lot of questions about, can we do it in a way that's going to be energy efficient? A big question with algae is water use. Clearly algae are, they grow in water. And can we do it in a way that is going to be sustainable in terms of water being an increasingly limited resource, in our world? One big breakthrough that I think could make a big difference is if we could figure out to grow algae for biofuel and that the algae could actually grow in salt water. Because salt water, we've got in abundance. So
there we go. Courtney in Madison, on to you now. Hi, Courtney.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, it's kind of along the lines of the question that a caller had earlier about tilling the plants back into the soil, which provides nutrients for the long-term health of the soil. But one thing that wasn't mentioned was the use of ammonia-based fertilizers, which are necessary, in my understanding, for the scale of corn production that is happening right now. So I was wondering what the energy ratio is, I guess, for amount of fossil fuels put in to amount of energy gotten out, and also what providing ammonia-based fertilizers means for the long-term health of the soil, in a world where there wasn't any natural gas. for fertilizer production.
Okay, let's turn to Natalia for that.
So that again is an excellent question, and so I should start sort of related to the question before. I think there is no one single answer or perfect biofuel for every situation in every place. There are a number of different crops and resources such as municipal waste and other dedicated bioenergy crops that should be considered. The issue with corn is that corn is being planted already. There is a substantial amount of corn planted in the United States and around the world. So if we can think about the production of biofuel from biomass utilizing corn as a co-product or as a byproduct of the production of grain, grain is the most expensive part of the plant to produce. Stover, in terms of nitrogen utilization, for example, and the stover is the relatively less expensive part. So if we are producing this corn already and farmers have these sometimes excess biomass produced in their fields, can we harvest some of that material, again, making sure that soil structure and long-term health is maintained, can that biomass be harvested? And can we produce corn varieties that maintain that level of grain production that is expected and at the same time be able to provide high-quality biomass that will be easily fermentable and be able to efficiently produce biofuels? So that is the main target for our research, and there are a number of components that need to be taken into consideration, and that's a reflection of the composition of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, because we know that we need to improve plants, but we also need to know what is the most efficient way to break down the cell walls, we need to efficiently ferment those cell walls, and then we need to do that in a sustainable manner. And that's exactly the frame and the constitution of the center, and all the researchers involved are focusing on the different aspects of that whole process.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And Dan and Marinette, we are on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. I was just wondering if either of your two guests had read the article in yesterday's New York Times about a company, I guess its name is RenMatrix, RenMatrix, that is using a supercritical hydrolysis system to fraction out the C5 and C6 sugars in cellulose. They're using a supercritical water is the only kind of so it's extraordinarily hot water and pressure. And apparently this is a process that has been used industrially currently for like the decaffeination of coffee and some other industrial applications. Mm-hmm. But what they're saying is that this is a way to break down any kind of cellulosic material, whether corn stover or even wood chips or switchgrass or some of these other cellulosic materials that kind of get brought up from time to time as base crops to be used in the creation of what they're doing is not creating fuels per se, but separating out the sugars. And so the product that comes out are these C5 and C6 sugars that can then be transformed into all kinds of different things, including plastics and also ethanol and, used as the base materials for biodiesels and things like that. It was in yesterday's New York Times, a very interesting article, and they were opening up a larger scaled plant in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. They already have a demonstration plant in Georgia, which can process up to 3 tons of cellulosic material a day. And what seems to be really interesting about it is the only other kind of solvent that's used is water. And the lignins that are left over from separating out the C5 and C6 sugars are burned to help produce some of the heat for this. So it's a very fuel-efficient, very cost-efficient, very simple process, apparently.
Well, let's check in with our guest here. And thanks a lot, Dan, for calling. And John, I believe you saw that article, did you not?
Yeah, Dan, that's great. You really, it's wonderful how much you got out of that article. And actually, I thought it was a very well-written article, both specifically about the process that they're working on. And I think just talking about, you know, what's necessary in terms of going from cellulosic materials. And as you said, they're largely focused on going from those polymers to the sugars. But then clearly, once you've got that sugar, you can go a lot of different directions in terms of different types of biofuel, be it ethanol or biodiesel or other types of chemical products as well. And I'm somewhat familiar with their research, and there's lots of different ways out there to skin this cat, so to speak. And, you know, in GLBRC, we actually do have a fair amount of work which is parallel with this. We actually, there's two other bioenergy research centers that the Department of Energy funds with whom we work actually quite closely, the Joint Bioenergy Institute out in California, and then the Bioenergy Science Center actually based out of Oak Ridge National Labs. And we actually collaborate a lot, and they're actually working on two different similar types of processes as well. And I don't need to go into details. But it is interesting that there's lots of different approaches that are being researched in parallel. And really what it comes down to is looking at kind of a complete accounting assessment, a life cycle analysis of what needs to go in to get those sugars and the corresponding fuels out. So how much energy in, how much energy out? Is there a greenhouse gas emission accounting that needs to be taking place, et cetera? And so one of the questions that came up in my mind when they talked about this process, just to give you some sense of how this works, is they talked about, and you mentioned this as well, that it's a very high temperature process and also requires a lot of pressure. Both of those translate into large amounts of energy inputs. And so what really needs to happen is an accounting of saying how much energy do you need to put into the process relative to the amount of fuel that you might, you know, get out mm-hmm. of the other end. And so we really need to systematically compare all these different options and see which is really going to be the best investment for us. You've just one brief digression. You mentioned C5 and C6 sugars, and that's great that you're actually working at that detail. Just in terms of, for the listeners, what that refers to is a C6 sugar is a sugar that has six carbons in it. And so glucose is the most common example of that. A C5 sugar simply just has five carbons in it. Hexose, xylose, there's a whole other set of sugars out there. It's interesting in that that one carbon makes a big difference in terms of fermentation. Some microbes have a taste bud for one versus the other. And so you kind of need to address that kind of issue in the mixture of sugars that you might have as a product of that reaction.
Mm. Thank you very much for calling, Dan. Appreciate your call. Art in Waukesha, I want to give you a shot now, too. Art, hello.
Hi, good afternoon. My question it goes back about two callers. I, too, favor biodiesel. My understanding is that ethanol has a lot less energy in it than diesel, so it seems sensible to aim towards the diesel. And this is more or less my question, is that I thought I had read that there are some, in effect, scrub plants that grow very well in basically non-agricultural type grounds that produce high levels of oils in their leaves and thus are rather easily converted to biodiesel. So I was just wondering if that was fact and what your people would know about that.
Okay.
And I will take things off the air.
Thanks, Art, for calling. John, I'm going to turn to you first.
Yeah, a couple things. One is, as you mentioned, it's really useful to think about how energy dense is that fuel that you're working with. And you're exactly right. Diesel fuel actually has more BTU or calories or joules, whatever energy you want to use, per gallon than gasoline or ethanol. It is worth noting that depending upon the design of your engine, that can make more or less of a factor. So for example, we actually work with some engineers here on campus who are designing some engines for the future, and we really want to be considered as we think about fuels for the future, what kind of engines are they going to go in? And actually it ends up that you can design an engine that actually uses ethanol much more efficiently than gasoline. Once again, I won't go into the details, but It is. There's a lot of variables that one needs to take into account. And then in regards to those shrubby plants, you're exactly right. There's some really interesting opportunities out there. One that I know a bit about is called Jatropha. It's a perennial plant that produces kind of a bean, which is very, very high in oils. And that can be extracted either for making biodiesel or in some developing countries. It's actually a really has the potential to be a great alternative for home heating and cooking. Without actually deforesting an area, you can just harvest the nuts. The plant continues to grow, and you have a very clean burning source of heat as well. So, we're aware of that work. I worked with a student team who was actually involved in a project in Haiti. Actually, they were on the show a couple years ago, looking at exactly this, and especially within the context of it being an appropriate type of fuel for a developing country like Haiti.
Thanks for that question. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. We have some open lines. Natalia, could you talk about the kinds of research that that you're actually doing? Describe your research process.
So the primary focus of our research is to exploit the genetic variability that there is in corn. And the perception for most people, if you're driving around the country, look at corn and corn looks all like corn. But there is actually a very rich reservoir of genetic variability in corn. And the overall goal of our project is actually to exploit that variability by looking at different cultivars. We look at tall plants and short plants, thicker stalks and thinner stalks, and bigger cobs and smaller cobs, and then try to associate that morphological, physiological variability with variants in the genome. We look at the DNA and also look at landmarks in the DNA and try to associate variation that we see in the phenotypes with variation that we see in the DNA to try to identify regions that are important for the traits that will make a corn plant a more efficient biofuel crop. And so we look at overall biomass production. Again, going back to the question before, if we can produce corn plants that maintain grain production while still producing more biomass with the same amount of input or hopefully less, that would be beneficial for this purpose. And also to be able to produce cultivars that have more digestible cell walls. So when these biomass are fermented in the biorefineries, there is less energy needed to break those cell walls and extract the useful polymers from those cell walls to generate ethanol. And so corn is a very important commodity. So anything that we can learn in using corn will directly affect the utility of corn. But corn is also a close relative of other proposed biofuel, dedicated biofuel crops such as switchgrass and miscanthus. So at the level of genetic identification, corn being a simpler diploid organism compared to a more complex, biologically more complex genome such as switchgrass and miscanthus, anything that we learn in terms of corn could be then translated to these other crops to hopefully improve their all these different traits as well.
And sort of looking long term, if we're able to come up with something, I'm thinking of the farmers now. Would this be an additional source of income for farmers? If you could do a one pass and have this separated and,
exactly,
and then be able to sell that? Or how?
Yeah, so that would be a big goal. If farmers could produce these materials that produce the same amount of grain and more biomass, and they can harvest it using equipment that allows them to just go through the field once and collect both materials. If there is a market for such biomass, that could be sold and farmers will get a bigger margin per acre in production.
Yeah.
So that would be that is the goal of the utility of all that we are doing.
And do you have a time range on this or a timeline on this? Or I mean, this is kind of basic stuff here.
Well, I think one of the primary questions was one that was asked by one of the listeners before is that there is no biorefinery at the moment accepting this biomass. I think in, and this is just my opinion, as soon as the demand appears, there will be resources that will generate this biomass. Now, until the demand is not there, it's very difficult, one, to predict what is exactly that we are looking for. Again, we need more biomass, and that's a little more straightforward. But exactly how that biomass needs to look like will depend a little bit on what John was referring before, is what is the fermentation organisms that are going to be used? How is this biomass going to be broken down? What enzymes, temperatures and conditions will be used to transform the biomass into ethanol, depending on what we are looking for. The kinds of the composition of these biomass, the most favorable composition, will look different. So once the demand is clearly there and there is a more clear picture of what is that we are looking for, this will definitely have a space.
I would think so. You know, a lot of your work is up on your website. Is it not, John?
We have a very robust website, www.goblrc.org. There's lots of material in there for the general public to learn more about biofuels. There's material in there for researchers to get a better idea of how they can potentially collaborate with our researchers. There's also a lot of material in there for education use as well that can be, go into the K-12 classroom, the undergraduate classroom as well. So a really wide array of opportunities.
And a description of the research that's really, like, Natalia and everybody else's.
It's all really well laid out there, described, some great graphics to help you get a sense of, you know, what all these different processes are and how they fit together.
And again, do we have a, I think we have it posted on our Facebook page. Yeah, we've got Judith, as usual, has got it posted in her efficient way, has that GLBRC website posted on our Facebook page. So if you're at the Larry Mueller Show, just click on it and we'll take you right to it. Well, Natalia, John, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure to have you with us today. I hope we can do it again.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a great pleasure to be here.
John Greenler, Director of the Education and Outreach Program for GLBRC, Natalia De Leon, Assistant Professor in Agronomy at UW-Madison, our guests. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.